Welcome to BTAC Beyond the Bulletin, the podcast. My name is Pete Lapp. I'm a threat manager with the BTAC, the Behavioral Threat Analysis Center. Get used to the acronyms. We're going to spell them out. And I'm joined by my good friend, my colleague.
I'm Dr. Kristen Schneider. Happy to be here with you today.
You know what, Kristen, Dr. Kristen, we get the, you know, we're going to have this one rule about our podcast, right? We use the title, Doctor,
yep,
in the intro.
Get it out of the way.
Get it out of the way, and then we go with Kristen and Pete.
Yep, that's better.
But I'm not a doctor, and I do not play one on television.
We won't be Dr. Pete and Dr. Kristen, then. We'll just be Pete and Kristen.
Pete and Kristen. So
I like it.
For our new audience, this is the first episode. We are off and running. Our colleagues came up with this idea, and then I think we drew straws and lost.
I think we might have been volunteered.
Volunteered, yes, to be host and co-host. And we're normally going to be joining you from maybe different parts of the country recording this. It just depends on the whims of travel and all that stuff. But at the same time, we are super excited to bring our first guest in on our very first episode.
And we've got a great guest for our very first episode. It's our own director, the director of the DITMAC, James Chappelle.
Yeah, he's kind of a in the insider threat world, he's quite the legend.
He is, and he's really the impetus, not just behind our team, but also the bulletin itself,
yeah,
and now this podcast. So part of the reason we really want to have him here with us today is because we want to talk about where the ideas for these things,
yep,
came from, some of the challenges along the way, and kind of some of the progress as well.
We might want to talk about the Yankees a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
Are
on
you?
That. I
okay.
am. I'm from Boston, and I'm a Red Sox fan,
oh,
so you're going to get me into trouble with him.
You know, I don't want to get anyone in trouble with anybody, but I feel like baseball, we can kind of push it a little bit. Let's try it and see how it goes, but ladies and gentlemen, our first guest,
Director James Chappelle.
Kristen and I are super excited to have our very first guest of our very first podcast. And what I have to say is, James is our boss's boss's boss. I think that's the hierarchy here. So we're not going to.
Sounds right.
Sounds right, right? I mean, we're kind of a level or two or three here. And I don't, you know, we're shooting this, we're recording this podcast in the hunt of baseball season. And I would be remiss if I didn't remind James that the New York Yankees are no longer in the playoffs, that their season is over as of the time of this recording. I have to start out by just stating, you know, level setting and stating, and we're gonna pivot to getting to know James a little bit better, but I have to start out by breaking that news to him, delicately, of course. But
you're gonna start out by giving the director a hard time.
I'm not. I mean, I'm from Philadelphia, and I have to.
It can lead to disgruntlement.
It can lead to disgruntlement.
You know, there's a lot of qualifiers there from an insider threat perspective.
Humiliation could be a theme that's coming in here.
It's not as humiliating as it was last year.
Well,
or to admitting being a Phillies fan.
27 world championships. Is that not what the Yankees are up to, 27 world
that's
championships?
That's what we've been up to since 2009.
Oh, wow. It's been a real dry spell. Yeah. My thoughts and prayers are with you. James, we want to get to know you a little bit better and let our audience get to know you a little bit better. You are the director of the DITMAC, and I would ask you to kind of start by telling our audience a little bit about you and about the DITMAC in general, please.
Sure. We're a super Department of War organization here where we just use acronyms all over the place. So DITMAC, DOD Insider Threat, or DOW, Insider Threat Management and Analysis Center. So I'll start with the DITMAC because that's way more important than getting to know me. But the DITMAC was established after the tragic events of the Washington Navy Yard shooting. And so the number of recommendations went forward, including things like running continuous vetting, continuous evaluation that the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency, DCSA, also is responsible for running centralized vetting to do background investigations and continuous vetting 95% of the federal government. So a pretty large part of the agency's mission. So the DIPMAC falls within the Defense Counterintelligence Security Agency. It's under the Counterintelligence and Insider Threat Directorate. And what we do is we provide support and services to the 45 Department of War components. So Army, Navy, Air Force, but also your combatant commands, your service organizations like DCSA. And we deliver analytic services. That includes the Behavioral Threat Analysis Center, the BTAC, that's made up of subject matter experts in behavioral psychology, cybersecurity, law enforcement, counterintelligence, management, employee relations, and threat assessment, threat management. Yeah. Do reviews of publicly available information and government databases to try to enrich and really contextualize the information we're seeing, and conduct assessments of the different programs that are out there to try to ensure compliance and also to determine efficiency and effectiveness. So the DIPMAC has a pretty large mission and part of an organization that's got a pretty large mission. In addition to the background investigations, the continuous vetting, we do the adjudications of those security clearances for the Department of War. And then we also have oversight of, I think it's over 11,000 companies, 12,500 yeah. facilities on the industrial security side of things, and provide counterintelligence support to that. And then we deliver security training to over 5 million training courses done last year. So DCSA has a pretty huge mission in general. DIPMAC's a good part of that. And then within that, the BTAC, in addition to providing consults on cases for those components, over 5,500 cases last year. We also see what you all produce on the BTAC bulletin, monthly publication that goes out. And it's usually dealing with one topic or another. Yeah. And I think the first one was get to know the BTAC or something yep. about the BTAC. So that's, I think.
And we're going to get all into that. I really want to unpack that quite a bit. I want to unpack that a little bit later. But one of the things I've heard you say a number of times over the years, you brought up the 45 insider threat hubs. Yeah. And your tagline, and you should copyright this, trademark it. James Chappelle said this, that if you've seen one insider threat hub within the now Department of War, you've seen one insider threat hub within the department. So they're all unique. And you know, we want to get back to talking about you, but at the same time, what's DIPMAC's role with trying to herd these cats and trying to get everyone kind of marching as much as possible in the same general mission vision that protects, you know, our warfighters and all the clear defense contractors and all the folks that are working to support the mission, the bigger mission?
Yeah, I won't go all Toby Keith and want to talk about me. And I got to give credit where credit's due. I actually stole that from Mark Burns, who runs our assessment program. And he's been part of the DIPMAC since, I think he was like the third member of the DIPMAC. So he's like, he's a plank holder. He's been around for a long time. Yeah. And so he's the one who said it. And it's true, right? So it's every component has their own responsibilities, their own requirements. And when the executive order was published, it was all departments and agencies. And the way that the Department of War chose to execute it was everybody's going to have their own program. So obviously the Army's got a much different mission than the Defense Intelligence Agency right. versus, the commissary agency, right? They're looking at different things. They're looking at from different perspectives. But that being said, and this is where, you know, the similarities come in, is that we're all looking for behaviors of concern. What are those potential risk indicators? What are those things that we should be really trying to highlight on? And so some of them have more resources than others. Some of them are much better at different things like user activity monitoring on the networks and mm-hmm. things like that. Our job is to try to give them as much support as possible. And that could be analytic support. That could be just closing gaps on information yeah. availability. It could be, you know, trying to make sure we've got the right points of contact. It could be identifying, hey, you're a little behind what we're seeing on the rest of the department, particular area. And so those are a number of different things that we kind of look at from that perspective. And so just like you said, there's one, all of them are, if you've seen one, you've seen one. What they all might need from us as far as support is a little different too. And so the best thing that we can do is maintain open lines of communication yeah. and continue to do things like the monthly BTAC bulletin and monthly training awareness programs, things like that.
So back to you, and that's all. That's thank you. That's really I think that's very informative for our audience. Getting back to you've been the director now for a little over 4 years.
Yeah, I went into the acting role in August of 21. So yeah, 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And it obviously was not your first stint in government in public service in the department. Where did you come from? And more importantly, you know, what skills did you bring up? What experiences did you bring up that helped prepare you best to become the director of the DITMAC?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it was in September, it was 20 years of federal service between my active duty time and my civilian time. So,
wow, that's a long time. Congratulations and thank you.
Yeah, I want to say it doesn't feel like a long time. It feels like it flies, but I think I'm trying to be as open and honest with our listeners as possible. No, it's
that's our definite goal here, yes.
So I started as an intel analyst on active duty, did 4 years active duty, spent about a year at U.S. Army UMA Proving Ground, working different security programs out there. And then went to the Army's Intelligence Security Command, a lot of security-related work. Spent a couple years at the National Intelligence Council as the chief of staff there. And then came to the DITMAC, chief of analysis and mitigation first, into the deputy director role, and then right into the director's role. And so I think having experience in the field, having been on active duty and kind of seeing things, you know, I spent most of my active duty career in Korea. So seeing things from that perspective, spending some time with different commanders at different echelons and understanding what their challenges were. At INSCOM, had the opportunity to not only work at the headquarters, but then also go do inspections of different programs and understanding subordinate commanders' challenges and things like that. So getting to see things in the field, but then also having that connection across intel and security and the insider threat. Really good partners on the counterintelligence side. So understanding kind of where the lines were from where security kind of ends, counterintelligence begins type of thing. I think all of those things have really helped kind of move me forward. And then at INSCOM had the opportunity to work on some Army-wide programs. And so working with 26 major subordinates or not major subordinate commands, but Army commands, direct report units, and Army Service Component Commands. That helped me to understand how to kind of work across 45 components, right? Because at the end of the day, those components don't report to me,
right?
But we have a product that we can provide to them, a service we can provide to them. And so getting them to kind of be the coalition of the willing and work with us and help to understand that we're not there to take anybody's roles or responsibilities away. We're there to help amplify them. So I think those things have kind of helped me to be prepared for where I am.
Well, thank you, and thank you for limiting the acronyms, because our audience is not used to the department vernacular, if you will, when it comes to acronyms. I think, as you well aware, we just recently passed NITAM, National Insider Threat Awareness Month. Partnering for Progress was the theme, and it seems like your experiences matched very well with that theme set where, you know, you don't have command and control over a lot of things. You've got to build relationships and build partnerships. So that seems to have been what defined your career that got you here and then what's helping you thrive. Now, I will say Kristen and I were talking yesterday in preparation for talking to you, and we were talking about our own dream jobs. What I had as a dream job growing up, what Kristen had as a dream job growing up, and I think that she came up with this great question about your dream job. Right, Kristen?
Please, absolutely. Leave it to the psychologist to go back a little bit farther.
Let's dig a little deeper.
I'm curious, James. What, as a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? And do you see any connection to what you do now?
I wanted to be like Mike. Didn't everybody who grew up in the 80s and 90s want to be like Michael Jordan?
I think that's just about right. I don't know. There's some variations on that theme, though. Tell us more.
So, you know, as a kid, and it's funny because, you know, I've got my own kids now. My son's a teenager getting ready to look is looking at colleges, and my daughter's seven, right? So they're little. And, you know, I was like, well, now when I was your age, right? Because now I'm dad, and apparently that makes you feel like you need to say things when I was your age. but when I was your age, I would spend all day outside, and I would be throwing the wiffle ball up and hitting it with the bat, or I'd be shooting hoops, or I'd be, you know, doing something outside. And it just, so yeah, when I was a kid, yeah, sure, I wanted to be like Mike. I wanted to be on the champion Bulls. I wanted to be the one dishing it off to Jordan or Pippen. But I also
not the shortstop for the New York Yankees.
I'm getting there. Okay, Pete, okay. Right? Like so. remember, this was a little pre Jeter, right? Mm-hmm. So this was Don Mattingly and then Ricky Henderson and Dave Winfield and those '80s Yankees when they were just putrid. And you know, it's so I feel a little spoiled that we've been able to have a good run of the playoffs, even if we're not winning championships. So I would say that the two things beyond just playing, right? Obviously, I wanted to grow up and be a major league player. The other thing that, you know, Phil Rizzuto was the announcer for the Yankees back then. Holy cow, right? So I would pretend like I was Phil Rizzuto announcing. Oh, wow. You know, so being a beat writer or an announcer for the New York Yankees, like going, being able to go call a game at Yankee Stadium, that would have been just a dream come true. So does that have anything to do? No, it has nothing to do with what I'm doing right now, other than the fact that I'm here on a microphone with you.
So what Pete hears from that, Kristen, is Pete's job is already in jeopardy because James is sitting there going, if you don't do your job well, I'm going to be the podcast co-host for BTAC Beyond. That's what Pete heard. Maybe it's the guilt in me, the trepidation of this. I don't know, but I heard.
I'm thinking at the very least, we get him back here again to talk with us.
I think
we've got a whole lot of different past bulletin topics we could go back to and do great episodes on.
Yeah, yeah, and Kristen, I mean, I owe you money because I picked starting shortstop for the New York Yankees. I thought that
indeed.
Was, I said that was it, and no, in fact, it was Michael Jordan and the Yankees announcer. But you know, to the point, when at some point in our lives, the dream doesn't ever die, but it moves aside and the reality takes over. And when your reality took over and it became clear that there's one Michael Jordan, what pivoted your ambitions towards public service?
So 9/11. So I was in college, 9/11 happened, and you know, I think for most people, kind of the world stopped at that moment, right? And I remember I was playing video games in between classes, and my roommate came running up the steps and he's like, man, the plane just crashed in the World Trade Center. I was like, no, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah. So that was, and I remember that October, home from college, talking to my dad. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about enlisting. And he's like, hey, finish college first, right? Make sure you get your degree first. And it was probably the best piece of advice he ever gave me. And then, you know, I finished my degree and I started working. My degree is in journalism, communications, journalism, broadcast. And so I started working at a really small newspaper, circulation of about 3,000 newspapers. And when you do that in a small town, you cover a lot of like Memorial Day parades and stuff like that. And I heard, you know, these veterans or these folks who are reservists or National Guardsmen talking about, you know, understanding their time to serve and things like that. It was 2005. It was the height of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I said, you know, I can do good, right? Yeah. I can help. And so that was the time where I was like, you know what, it's my turn to go serve my country. Okay. And so that's what led me there. And September 26th, 2005, I was on my way to Fort Leonard Wood, Special Chapelle.
Wow. Wow. Impressive. So, you know, in the arc of your career, you're in uniform, you're serving, you transition into civilian Department of War, Department of Defense at the time, serving. And then what gets you into the insider threat discipline? Because it's so unique. And I think, you know, Kristen, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, once you get into it and you get to experience this kind of ecosystem and these, and I mean,
it's unlike anything else. I have to agree with you, Pete, on that. It's, I don't know, you know, certainly I'll speak for myself and say, I don't think I recognized it as a field that I was outside of and until I found myself beginning to be involved in it.
Yeah.
And it's really such a unique multidisciplinary field. I'm curious too, how did you get there to that? Was it sort of like my experience where you sort of found yourself almost stumbled into it or did you seek it out?
That's a really good question, right? Because insider threat as a discipline, as we know it from the federal side, is really only like 13 years old, right? We got the executive order in November of 2011. So some of this goes back to, again, kind of the background. I remember one of my high school teachers, you know, she referred to me as a Renaissance man. And she's like,
because wow.
It was a little bit of everything, right? I was the captain of the wrestling team, but I was the president of the band, right? So it's a very diverse kind of jack of
varied
all.
Varied interests.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of none for sure, right? And so as I was coming out of, you know, off of active duty, I got into the security side of things, but security is not just one thing. It's personnel security, information security, all of those different disciplines. And then I remember the idea that when I was at INSCOM, hey, my boss at the time, Jim McAlary, walked in and said, hey, we're getting the insider threat mission. I was like, I don't know what that means. I just got into the role I'm in. What are you doing to me? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so, but when I started reading through, you know, the guidance that the National Insider Threat Task Force had actually published, the NIDIF had published, and started to understand it, I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. There's a really good opportunity for us to get ahead of, you know, the potential bad actors. And you tie that for me, right? So, wow, you guys are good at this. Wow, you really got dug deep on this one. Hey, so for me, like somebody who's like spent their life kind of a jack of all trades, but really likes to try to take on hard tasks, something new, change management, understands the different disciplines of things, and then really dives deep into that and understanding it. As we started to really work towards that mission, it became something I was passionate about. Yeah. I was like, here's an opportunity for us to help people at risk before they actually commit an action, or to protect people from somebody who might take an action that would potentially damage them, whether that's a loss of classified information or targeted violence or anything like that. And so it all comes back to service again, right?
Yeah.
What am I doing in service to not just my country, to the Department of War, but to my fellow citizens, my fellow men and women, right?
So. It's a calling. Well, good, Kristen.
It is. And that's what's so exciting about it, too, is, you know, I think for me as well, coming to this field as a trauma psychologist, as someone who has worked with people who have really experienced some incredibly difficult and painful experiences, to want to go back and say, you know, what can we do to actually get ahead of this? Can we prevent some of these things? Can we sort of get ahead of the curve? Which is what we do with behavioral threat assessment is really about trying to intercept someone who's vulnerable and to get them some help before they do something really horrendous that has tremendous negative impact on other people. And so to try to get to work in that space of prevention and intervention early on is really exciting. And especially to do it in this field where we get to work in this interdisciplinary way, it can be really challenging and hard, but it sounds like that's part of what you love about it as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, just when the team comes in and starts talking about, hey, we got this case, it did this, I'm like, ooh, that's really interesting. What about this? And they're like, oh yeah, we did this. So it's just like it's almost like the puzzle, right? You're trying to put together and you know, the team we have is just phenomenal, right? And so I think that's super helpful too. It's challenging when you don't have the right folks around, but it's the puzzle, trying to help people, and it's just something that
let's
all of a sudden I'm passionate about.
Let's talk a little bit more about the BTAC itself. You know, one of the reasons that we're so excited to have you here for our first episode is to sort of help our listeners understand kind of where we're coming from, the creation of the team itself, as well as some of the initiatives that you've really spearheaded, like the bulletin and now the podcast. But from your perspective, what is the BTAC? What's the history behind the creation? Really, I think you're in a great place to really speak to both the kind of mission and purpose of the team. Why it was created in the first place?
Yeah. So when the DMACC was established, and they had at the time there was the .83 as a DoD manual. That for the
we're not going to spell that one policy.
That's as far as I'll go, right? But that's okay. within the federal bureaucracy, that's what drives requirements, right?
It is important.
It's what drives resources and all of that, right? It's got to come from somewhere. And so, you know, one of the things that was included in the recommendation that went to the secretary that he approved, and that was in the initial manual, was that the DMACC would be staffed with these subject matter experts in specific areas, right? And behavioral psychology was one of them, counterintelligence, law enforcement. And so when I got there, there was a very small team. I think mm-hmm. it was like two docs, the counterintelligence law enforcement expert, and a TATM, a threat assessment, threat management subject matter experts, me. And so it was a super small team. And you know, the DMACC itself was pretty small. I got there during COVID, so yeah. It was kind of a weird time. But Dr. Brad Millick was at the program, within the Pentagon. There's a program office within the Pentagon, and then the DMACC's kind of like the overarching operational arm. And so there was a push to kind of grow this Behavioral Threat Analysis Center, this group of subject matter experts, into something much larger. And so he had a really good vision for what that looked like. And as we were looking at it, I said, you know, we're missing out on the cybersecurity folks.
Right.
We're missing out on management employee relations, because when we're talking about assessing risk, we really want to look at it from a multidisciplinary team perspective. We want to get all those different views and perspectives on there. And so we kind of moved in an operational shift in the way that we were aligned to grow that capability and that capacity. And so, you know, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, so the BTAC is almost all contractors. We have like one program manager and the rest is all contractors, because these folks need to be the best of the best. So not to build your egos up, but we need to make sure that we've got the smart of the smart folks to make sure that we're able to advise appropriately these different organizations. Because going back to the beginning where we talked about if you've seen one component, you've seen one, a lot of the different components within the Department of War don't have a robust capability. So we provide a centralized service that can support multiple components, all 45 components if they choose to utilize them, in these different areas and subject matter expertise. And having the ability to look at it through those different lenses ensures that we give them the best view possible of the risk and how they can go about implementing mitigation measures. So a lot of credit to Brad Millick, who had, you know, some of the initial thoughts on this. And then the team that we were able to kind of pull together to start to get things rolling, Brad Silk, Brandon Neeson, right? A lot of folks who kind of helped us to get where we are. And I think it's been a resounding success.
So. Well, thank you. And I will say, you know, being one of those SME teams, and I will say I slipped through the cracks. I don't know how I got in the door. I'm going to give a shout out to Kristen and her fellow PhD behavioral scientist SMEs.
Oh,
because
thanks, Pete.
They are, I really think in the BTAC, they are our secret weapon. And I have a profound respect for each of the different discipline teams, but, you know, I look at the insider threat community, and especially the psychology part of the insider threat community, and it's such a big, important part of insider threat. And if you think about all the big brains out there, the PhDs that are focused in insider threat and have that as a specialty, and the fact that we have seven, Kristen, right? PhDs, yeah. behavioral scientist yep. of this
well,
community.
Well, and that, more than that, actually, Dr. Fouth, our right? EMR, mm-hmm. right? Dr. Miaris, right? right?
We've, brand new
we've
Dr.
Miaris. We've got quite, yep. quite a few folks outside of our right. outside of our clinical psychologists, even. Right. We've got some real expertise on this team. And it's funny that you say that, because I think this is the beauty of, again, the multidisciplinary team. I feel like the people that I learn the most from on a daily basis, and no shade to the rest of my behavioral science team, but the folks that I learn the most from are the people who have the backgrounds most different from mine. Our TADMs, right? Our threat assessment threat managers. I learn so much from each of you every day, every time we work on a new case, because people are coming from really different professional backgrounds than yep. I have, and have just completely different ways of seeing things that really help to challenge me and get me to look at things in a case in a new way that I think is just absolutely the heart of what we do. And I love it. I love working on this team. I have to say, I think kind of going back to what James was saying is, you know, the people. It's really about the people. Bringing the right people together really, really makes a difference.
And back
more,
to, back,
even more than what you call things, right?
Yeah, and back to my compliment, right? I'll give a quick vignette. So without giving a lot of detail, there was an individual that we were helping an insider threat hub with, and the psychologist on our team, one of our colleagues, was the person who had antisocial behavior as a diagnosis and narcissism. And mm-hmm. and I have a copy of the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM. I've read it in grad school, but I'm not a professional. And when the combination of those two diagnoses were put together, that expertise that doctor was able to provide to the Insider Threat Hub, it made them go, oh, now we get it. Now we understand what that risk is. And I do think that is something that the BTAC has in spades, an ability to provide as a service to hubs and other potential clients out there that we can support. So how did you come up with the, do you know how the name BTAC, we always talk about the band name. Hmm. How did you come up with the band name BTAC? Do you know? Maybe this is a trick question, because I think I know the answer.
Yeah, I want to take credit for it, but it wasn't mine.
I don't think you can. I think it came from the FBI. I think
that was the original. But I'm curious, because the FBI is the Behavioral Threat Assessment Center, and yeah. we are the Behavioral Threat Analysis Center, although they are the Behavioral Analysis Unit, Behavioral Threat Assessment Center. So they managed to get both of them in there.
So again, it was Dr. Millick was the one who was kind of pushing on this, and he was, so the initial idea was to make it very similar yeah. to what the FBI's unit was, but we had to make it DOW centric, right?
yeah.
And, and what are we doing? We're doing analysis, right? And so I think when you look at what the DIPMAC holistically offers to components, it's analytics support and yep. services, right? And so I think that aligns well to both a similar model to what the FBI provides, but yep. at the same time aligns to what the DIPMAC provides. And so it's
a hybrid.
My perspective, it was a good marriage of the two concepts.
Yep.
And allowed for us to really kind of take that next step forward.
And speaking of bands, you know, Paul McCartney admits that everyone's been ripping off the Beatles forever. So, you know, it's like, you know, if we're stealing some ideas from the FBI, I don't think we're
stealing from the best.
We're in good company.
Imitation is the greatest form of
greatest
flattery.
Greatest form of flattery.
Indeed.
Absolutely. So the bulletin. Indeed. Let's pivot to the bulletin.
Yeah, let's talk about the bulletin. You launched the bulletin pretty early on, before the team was really even at full operating capability. Tell us what led you to want to publish the bulletin. Why a bulletin? What have been some of the challenges? How did we get started with that? That was before either Pete or I had joined the team.
Yeah, I knew that when we had all of this knowledge, this subject matter expertise, the part of our role, besides just doing direct case support was we need to get more information to the components. We need to enable the analysts across the community even more than we are.
Yeah.
Because we can't be everywhere. We can't look at every case. We're a smaller team than a lot of folks realize. And so how do we get after that? And so I said, hey, what if we came? We had done a couple of different products before. I can't remember what the names of them were, but they were more in response to different things that were taking place at the time. And I said, hey, let's be a little bit more proactive and let's start putting something out on like a monthly basis. And I said, can't be more than a page, right? And yeah. I know that we've broken that rule a couple times on special editions. And
that's a often, hard, though. That's a we're hard pretty rule. Good at sticking to the one pager.
I gotta admit, that's a hard rule, James.
But the attention is, but span is yeah. if I have to flip the page, like even if I have to open an attachment versus mm-hmm. something that's in the email, that's extra effort. Like, and the pace that we work at, it just doesn't lend itself to that. So you keep it to a single page and you put all that content in there. So that was the initial driving force behind that. And then I know that we leave a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor, right? And so I was like, what a great opportunity. Podcasts are really taking off. Obviously, it's one of the big things. Everybody talks about the podcasts they listen to as they're driving, especially here in DC because the traffic is horrendous. What a great opportunity to get some more of that content out there, right? And so not everything will apply to everybody in every situation, but what we have are folks who have studied this stuff, mm-hmm. who have lived this for decades, right? Just hundreds of years of experience combined within the BTAC. And so how do we get out there? Hey, these are some of the best practices. Here are some of the things to look at. Here are some mitigation methods. And I think, you know, just some of the challenges have been, hey, you know, now we've done, what, 24 of these?
26. I counted yesterday, 20, including the special bulletins.
Right.
You'll throw us a little hey, I got this idea. And it's like, oh, boy, here we go. You know, and I need it in 2 weeks. It's like, you know, so the challenges that you throw at us are we welcome them.
Yeah, so I think that the content has been good, but it's like we need to make sure that they can maintain they're fresh,
right.
They're relevant.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think the other part is just you all are so brilliant in the time that you have and things like that. As I'm looking at it and I'm editing it, like sometimes when I send things back, I'm like, they are going to hate me for this. Like, but that's my job, right?
I like getting your edits back. I like getting your edits back.
Speak for yourself.
Sometimes challenging, but almost always better.
I think I had to get Pete to hug one day.
It's a unique experience.
Right? What do you mean you don't like Kelly Green? It's the greatest color ever. The color scheme does not change, James.
Yeah.
Well, so. There's some hills that you've got to be willing to die on.
Yeah. But I think that the reception that we've received shows that all of the kind of the challenges and the timing, and I know, you know, the back and forth has been worth it because, you know, just – when DCSA does a great job of promoting it out on LinkedIn, and yeah. I know that you all do a great job of promoting it there as well, just seeing some of the comments about the content there and whatnot. And then even for NITAM, National Insider Threat Awareness Month, the NITAM notes that we put out there, just the positive response right. from the community validates that what we're doing is important, it's timely, it's relevant, and it rings true for people. And so I think, you know, that makes the challenges worthwhile.
And I think to me, the distribution list continues to grow. I think we're up to 1,500. I'd love to know how many more of those 1,500 are sharing to mm-hmm. their coworkers. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the overall distribution? You know, those are that's data we'll probably never know, Kristen. But, you know, I do find when I'm out and about talking to other groups, people know about the bulletin, capital T, capital B, and they are looking forward to receiving the next bulletin. And they're difficult topics. They're not easy topics,
yes.
right? They're not easy to talk about.
That's what I love about it is it's incredibly challenging to address some of these topics, especially in that succinct way. But I think it's important, right? I mean, it would be a lot easier to just avoid talking about these things and to avoid dealing with them. But in the long run, we certainly recognize that we pay a price for that. And so getting out ahead of things, opening up those difficult conversations, helping other people to have a beginning of a place to have those difficult conversations is, I think, one of the things that's great about the Bulletin. But I'm also really excited to be able to use this podcast as a way of diving deeper. In particular, I'm a big nerd about research, so it's one of the things that I'm excited that we get to include in the Bulletin, but also that we're going to get to talk to some of these researchers who have done this work and can tell us more about the things that they've learned. So, you know, as we do this podcast, looking to dive deeper on some of these topics with people who work on these types of cases, who do this research. I think one of the things, you know, that we get to work on going forward is developing new ideas, but I think also kind of going back and doing some exploration on some of the past bulletins that we've already created.
Yeah, and I know that there's some that, you know, probably were like 5 pages, and so we're like, oh, we can break these into separate ones, right? So that's allows you to line some of that up as well. One of the other things that I heard, you know, we actually got feedback that one of the components used the research that was included in one of the bulletins to go back to their general counsel to modify their triggers on user activity monitoring, right? So the fact that the bulletins are supported not just by experiences, personal experiences, but by research in a lot of cases, really carries weight when our components in particular are going back to talk with how they may change a process or a procedure or the way that they conduct their user activity monitoring. So it's just incredibly important that we have the brilliant folks that we have doing it in that way.
I would say, and we work very hard to, maybe this is the researcher, you know, academics aspect. We want to cite appropriately all of our references so people can take a look and dive deeper into that, and the things that we're putting out, you know, is cited in research or things that have been previously published. So hopefully that's a value add. And I do think, you know, if we pivot towards the podcast, the vision is to really grow, not just grow the audience, grow the knowledge, but also kind of get into that research that goes into the bulletin. Is that what you're hoping that Kristen and I can accomplish?
Yeah, I think all those things, right? No pressure. Don't screw it up. But no, I think all of those things, right? So again, a lot of this is about how we get the information into the community, right? And how do we grow the community? Because right now it's incredibly small, but incredibly important. And if you look back at, like, on the private corporation side, data loss, things like that, you know, the average cost for an insider threat incident continues to grow. Yeah. There's a number of companies that have done incredible research into that, you know, into the millions of dollars. And so we know that, and then on the flip side, not just the data loss side, but on the targeted violence, right?
Life.
A number of different states, California, Minnesota, have come up with laws on the targeted violence side, workplace prevention of violence and stuff like that. So there's a lot of opportunities as the community grows. How do we continue to be thought leaders in that, and pay homage to the folks who have done a lot of the research and whatnot, and really get that information out? The bulletin is a great, like, it's a Cliff's note type of thing. And now here's your actual 400 page, but you can listen to it on your drive, right? And so getting those, you know, the opportunities, if we can get some of those smart folks in to talk about that on the podcast, I think that's just going to be incredibly insightful, and it will help to grow the community. And the better the community is at doing their jobs, the better it's going to create a society of people who are going to be positive in the workplace, right? So a lot of this goes back to building the right culture, making sure people have the opportunities to do the right things in the workplace. So big, big, lofty goals that I think are secondary and tertiary to the immediate objective, which is trying to share information, build communities, build opportunities for increased positive culture within the workplace.
Kristen, what I heard was challenge. And what I'm responding to is challenge accepted. Yeah,
we can do that, right?
We can do that. And it's not just you and I. Obviously, there's a there's 20 other people behind us that are supporting us and giving us ideas and constructive thoughts about the podcasts and the bulletins and everything. I mean, there's a whole team behind this that make Chris and I look pretty okay. I won't say brilliant. Speaking for myself, I won't say brilliant, but like smart enough. So it kind of last thing I think we would want to cover, you know, we've touched on, you know, beginning with 9/11. When you live in the insider threat space, you read, even just reading research, there's a lot of heavy stuff. The Association of Threat Assessment Professionals, ATAP, of which many of us are a member of, they put out a quarterly report, and there's a paper that talks about the attack that killed 17 kids in Parkland, Florida, and just motivating myself to read that heavy topic, it can be a challenge. I won't lie to you, Kristen. I don't. Maybe you have different perspective on it as a psychologist. You know, how do you?
No, I think it's cumulative, right? I mean, the cases we work, the material that we encounter. We're talking about doing a future bulletin on this topic of secondary trauma, right? Exposure to trauma that isn't necessarily happening directly in your life, but which you're exposed to and is certainly very real. I think that whether it's in the research that we do, in the cases that we work, in the people that we interact with and try to help, it does get very, very heavy, and people do have to find real strategies, real intentional strategies for managing these types of things.
So I guess, so the question is, James, you know, how do you motivate yourself to continue your scholarship, continue learning, but in these areas that are really, really heavy, heavy topics? And then what do you do on the outside in life to mitigate that impact? You know, what do you do for fun, James Chappelle?
I have kids. I'm not allowed to have fun. So one, I think it's a really good point. And everybody has to kind of figure out what their own self-care looks like. I've heard Kristen say a lot of times, I'm a psychologist, I'm not your psychologist, right? So, but if you...
Boundaries.
Yeah, right? Like, but if you...
Having boundaries, yep, that's huge.
Yeah, if you need to get that type of help, then you need to get that type of help. Everybody should be, you know, trying to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, you know, and that's different for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Some people will dig in more and spend more time at work because that helps them to unburden or whatever. And other people are like, I got to get away, right? And so I think it's just different for everybody. For me, I think what helps me is just trying to stay true to the why.
Yeah.
Why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, go back to the Simon Sinek methodology of you start with why and the rest kind of builds out from there.
Right.
And so I think that's incredibly helpful. But, you know, I joke, I say, I've got kids, I'm not allowed to have fun on my free time. Like, I love coaching my kids, my daughter's baseball and softball teams, right? Just being out, like, it goes back to the beginning, right? Baseball, right? Being out the field. And we take a number of trips as a family, right?
That's great.
So I think that those are opportunities for releases for me. You know, I liked watching the Yankees play, but not so much in that Toronto series.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that kind of helped me through some of those challenges. And it can be rough, right? Like, and it's not necessarily the casework all the time. Sometimes it's just, you know, fighting some of the battles of different bureaucracy and trying to make sure that, and making sure that the team knows, that we're trying to do what's best for them, because there's been, you know, a lot of changes, and change is not necessarily bad,
right?
But we've got to make sure that they know what we're changing and why we're changing and things like that. And so yeah, it's some of the burdens that I carry are probably a little bit different and don't necessarily look the same. And so, you know, sometimes getting away from that administrative stuff and reading some of the heavy stuff is actually a way to get away from some of that other stuff. So again, I think it's different for everybody, but you know, that's kind of the way that I navigate it.
I'm impressed that you were actually a coach. 1 year I was my daughter's assistant to the assistant coach. it was really bad. And it was a soccer team. And I had played soccer as a kid a little bit. That's as high up in the coaching elevation that I got, assistant to the assistant coach. So congratulations on you, whatever you're doing well at home to be the actual coach is laudable. And I can tell you it does translate into your professional life as well. So, we want to thank you for being our first guest.
Absolutely.
The bar is set really high, Kristen. I mean, this is
It is. James, do you have any other final thoughts that you want to share with folks before you go? I know we've covered a pretty wide range of topics today. Is there anything that any other kind of final thoughts you want to leave folks with?
Yeah, I think again the BTAC does it's primarily made up of contractors. It's primarily focused on the support to the Department of War. But what I think it provides or it emphasizes is it validates the multidisciplinary team approach, the level of subject matter expertise that can be levied to potential cases, but then also the folks that are able to do a lot of research. And so I think it just enhances the community. And so really the goal for all of these beyond this one, right? So sorry, you got me and there's not a lot of subject matter expertise that coming out of this other than this is how we got where we are. but I think when we move, as we move forward with these and we start to explore different topics, the additional kind of content, the additional research behind it, the additional case studies that come along with it, I think are just going to prove to be incredibly valuable for the community. Yeah. But also, folks need to understand that because it worked in one case doesn't mean it will always work in that case. And so you can't say, well, I heard the BTAC, the Beyond the Bulletin podcast, and they said to do this. Well, you need to examine each case on a case by case. And I think that's one of the other things that's like really super interesting about insider threat is it's not just if you've seen one hub, you've seen one. It's if you've seen one case, you've seen one. And people, because everybody's different, people act
absolutely
really different, and sometimes they just do strange things. And so you've got to really look at each case individually. Yeah. So I'm not trying to put cold water on anything. I think this is going to be phenomenal. I think the content is going to be great as we move forward. I would say if you haven't seen the BTAC bulletins, go check them out. They're on the DCSA website, dcsa.mil, under the Counterintelligence and Insider Threat Directorate. And that will give you some idea of things to come. But I know that Pete and Dr. Schneider are working tirelessly to try to get some amazing, amazing folks in here to provide some content moving forward. So looking forward to listening to them myself.
Well, thank you. We've got guests lined up, and I have a feeling once this kind of starts to build an audience, we're going to have guests knocking on our door. Right, Kristen? It's just going to be...
Oh, absolutely.
We're going to have to be like, don't call us, we'll call you. that's kind of,
We do have some really exciting plans. We've got a brand new bulletin just posted online concerning online behavior, insider threats, and network systems for the month of October. And we're going to be doing our podcasts based on some of our prior bulletins just as we get started. Eventually working our way up to releasing them simultaneously with the new bulletin every month.
Good point. Good point. All right, James, we've taken up too much of your time, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for being our first guest, and we look forward to having you back for another conversation in the future.
And a big shout out to our comms team here for getting everything set up and getting us rolling.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Indeed.
You know, wow, that time went so fast. I think we were talking for almost 45, 50 minutes, and it felt like 10. What a great first guest James was.
I'm really happy with how that went. I just think, it really gives us a flavor for some of what's to come, but kind of sets the stage of where how we got to this point in the first place.
He set the table.
He did.
He set the table for all of this. Very nicely. You know, there's nice Civil War out. There's plenty of there's dessert, You know, we've got dessert too as part of our menu here. He did a phenomenal job of really detailing the Dip Mac, detailing the bulletin that we're all very proud of.
We are.
Our audience in that, with the bulletin is growing. I have a feeling, I'm knock on wood, that our audience in this podcast is going to really start to take off.
Well, I hope we can bring some more people into this realm of behavioral threat assessment and management. It's something I know that you and I both feel really passionately about. Came to in different ways.
Yeah.
We've got really different backgrounds, right?
Yep.
Your background as a special agent in the FBI.
Yeah.
I'm a clinical psychologist. Really different fields, but I think we have some synchronicity and some real alignment. And I hope that other people can get excited about this too, because it's something I think we're both passionate about.
So can I ask you a favor?
Please.
As we move forward, I know you are a psychologist.
Sure.
Clinical, you diagnose, you do all this stuff.
I do.
Can you kind of like be polite? And when you start talking about my idiosyncrasies, my little things that I probably should be working
on. Are you worried that I'm diagnosing you?
I'm a little worried about that you might be diagnosing
me. I promise I'm not. I'm only doing that when I'm getting paid for it.
Well, let's not just do that. We won't do that on the air. Let's do that when we hit
okay.
cut.
That's fair.
And then in fairness. But I think we had a great first guest.
Yeah.
And our second guest is like really.
Yeah. Well, I think we can share now, can't we? Who we've got? Can we share who's coming up in our next episode?
I think we should wait.
All
Let's
right.
wait.
We'll keep it under wraps for now. But come back, folks. Our second episode, I would venture to say it might be even better than our first episode.
James, she said that. Not me.
He set a high bar.
He set a high bar. He set a high bar.
We got something special planned for episode number two.
We're really excited. Thanks for coming with us on the journey, and we look forward to you all tuning in.
Thanks for joining us today.
The views and opinions presented herein are those of the interviewer and or interviewee and do not necessarily represent the views of the Department of War or its components, including Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency, or DCSA. Further, any reference to the use of specific resources or consultation with non-government personnel does not constitute endorsement by the Department of War, its components, or DCSA.